We receive support from the Blandin Foundation Strengthening Rural Minnesota. More at blandinfoundation.org. Coming up at 6:30, it's National Native News. Right now, we continue with Morning Edition here on People Powered KAXE.
Good morning. The Justice Department is sending some of its Epstein files to the House Oversight Committee today. The chairman says at least some of those will eventually be released to the public. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Famine has officially been declared in northern Gaza. 500,000 people face catastrophic conditions. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin. More than 100,000 children under five are at risk of dying from malnutrition. And Google Dolls frontman John Resnick makes the case to his daughter that at least at one point he was cool. It is Friday, August 22nd. On this day in 1989, Nolan Ryan struck out Ricky Henderson and became the first MLB pitcher to reach 5,000 strikeouts. His career record of 5,714 still stands. News is next.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. The World Authority on Food Insecurity has declared famine now exists in northern Gaza. The group of experts says over 500,000 people there could die of starvation. Israel rejects the findings and says the panel overlooked Israeli data on aid deliveries. California Democratic lawmakers have passed a controversial redistricting proposal. It seeks to redraw congressional districts held by Republicans and flip them to Democratic control. This comes as Texas lawmakers consider a similar effort to boost Republicans. CAP Radio's Laura Fitzgerald reports.
The California proposal could yield 5 new congressional seats for Democrats next year. Governor Gavin Newsom says the plan will nullify the Texas redistricting proposal.
Because when all things are equal, we're all playing by the same set of rules, there's no question that the Republican Party will be the minority party in the House of Representatives next year.
Republicans oppose the legislation, arguing it sidelines California's independent redistricting commission. The measure now heads to voters who will weigh in during a special election on November 4th. For NPR News, I'm Laura Fitzgerald in Sacramento.
President Trump visited with National Guard and federal law enforcement forces in Washington, D.C. yesterday. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports Trump is boasting he's reduced crime in the city.
Carrying a handheld microphone, President Trump strolled into a group of law enforcement officers wearing vests that identified them as FBI and Secret Service, D.C. Metropolitan Police, and National Guard troops in fatigues. The president thanked them for their efforts to address what he has described as rampant crime and homelessness.
We've had some incredible results. The results have come out, and it's like a different place. It's like a different city. It's the capital. It's going to be the best in the world.
He also promised to improve areas maintained by the National Park Service, including planting new grass. Trump had earlier suggested he would be going out on patrol with the officers. Instead, he brought them hamburgers and pizza. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
The Trump administration has rescinded longstanding guidance for schools on the rights of students who are learning English. NPR's Janet Ujung Lee reports.
Crafters of the Obama-era guidance argued that its purpose was to comply with the Civil Rights Act, that all students shouldn't be discriminated by their national origin and can, quote, have equal access to a high-quality education. An Ed Department spokesperson wrote in a statement to NPR that the now rescinded guidance was overly prescriptive and micromanaging of how states implement English learning programs, and that each state should be able to independently decide how to best educate non-English speaking students. Roughly 5 million public school students in the United States don't yet speak English. Janet Ujung Lee, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News. The migrant who was wrongfully deported from Maryland to El Salvador could be released from detention today. Kilmer Abrego Garcia has been held in Tennessee. Federal officials accuse him of human smuggling, a charge he denies. But if Abrego Garcia is released and returned to Maryland, he faces another challenge. Trump administration officials say they may detain him again and attempt to deport him. Many Americans think that using health insurance means they'll get the best deal on health care. But in fact, sometimes it's much cheaper to pay for health care in cash. Alex Olgan explains.
The differences can be stark. One woman's insurance was billed more than 10 times the cash rate for a genetic test during pregnancy. G. Bai with Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health found among hospitals that publish prices, half of them set cash rates lower than their middle-of-the-road insurer price for lab tests, x-rays, and some surgeries.
So this is totally surprising and ruined my faith in the pricing advantage of insurance companies.
Bai says healthcare providers like cash because they can collect fast and avoid administrative headaches. But for consumers shelling out hundreds or thousands every month for insurance coverage, it's a frustrating dynamic. For NPR News, I'm Alex Olgan.
Hurricane Erin continues to pull away from North America. It never hit land. But the storm is so gigantic, it's still causing dangerous rip currents. Forecasters have posted rip current warnings from Florida up to the Canadian border. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
Let's talk about Minnesota. There's a tremendous spirit of collaboration between different agencies and the public and business and universities.
This is Beyond Active Duty, Caring for Those Who Served, a series exploring the challenges Minnesota's veterans face, as well as the opportunities and services available to them.
I'm Eric Alness, and I'm a veteran. We have vet centers at universities that are a direct result of what the Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Veterans Affairs have done in the 2000s, early 2000s. You know, that was part of Larry Shelto's initiative. I was talking to people in the military. I'd say, you know, business really wants to hire you. And I said, so when you're reaching the end of your military career, or even if it's you're just doing one or two terms and then you're leaving, it's incumbent upon you to study the culture and the language of business, or if you're going to academia, of the schools. And there's groups out there like the Eagle Group that come together on a monthly basis. They work with veterans in doing the transition, but they also work with the companies to understand who veterans are.
Beyond Active Duty, Caring for Those Who Served is produced by EMPERS with support from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, providing our veterans with help. Veterans can find that help online at minnesotaveteran.org.
Morning edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Good morning. In a few minutes, we will hear from an attorney who represents several alleged victims of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. We'll start, though, with the Justice Department sending their first batch of Epstein files to a top House Republican today.
House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer told reporters yesterday they'll make at least some of those records public eventually.
We're going to be transparent. We're doing what we said we would do. We're getting the documents, and I believe the White House will work with us.
But critics, including some Republicans, say they're worried the release will be far from comprehensive.
NPR congressional correspondent Claudia Grisales has been following this and joins me now. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Leila.
Okay, so there's been a lot of attention over the Epstein case. What role is the House Oversight Committee playing here?
Well, so far, they're playing the biggest role we've seen from Congress. Earlier this month, the committee subpoenaed the Justice Department for records related to its investigation of Epstein and his longtime associate. This is convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell. And Chairman Comer said the first batch of those documents are expected to arrive today, and more will follow from there. Comer says the names of victims will be redacted before they decide what to release publicly. And this really marks a major step for Republicans who for months have fended off questions about transparency around Epstein, who died in a jail cell by suicide 6 years ago this month. The party's base has clearly been angry with President Trump and the party for not releasing these records as part of a campaign promise, raising the heat on lawmakers, even forcing the House to leave early for this current August recess to avoid any more votes on the issue this summer.
Yeah, I mean, we've been seeing all this infighting in the Republican Party, mm-hmm. the anger from the base. But what about Democrats? What are they saying about these records going to the committee now?
Well, they argue ultimately this document release will be limited and carefully controlled by Republicans. And they've really jumped on this issue as part of a political calculation, inflaming this GOP party divide with the base.
And last month, Trump called for the release of some grand jury records. Where do those stand? Or what is that stance?
Right. The Justice Department asked three judges to unseal those records, but in all three cases, the judges said no. That includes a federal judge in Manhattan this week who said there was not sufficient justification to unseal those records. Mm-hmm. The judge said thousands of pages in the government's possession would go further to inform the public than the mere 70 pages of testimony the DOJ was asking for.
Now, Congress will return from their recess after the Labor Day holiday. What role should we expect them to play with this issue in their back?
Well, we know the House Oversight Committee also wants to speak with Ghislaine Maxwell and is trying to negotiate a date to interview her with her attorneys. The committee also wants testimony from nearly a dozen witnesses. These are top officials, and they include former President Bill Clinton, his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, several past attorneys general, and former FBI Director Robert Mueller and James Comey. We also know that Democrats are going to continue to push for more transparency, and they have an unlikely ally in House Republican Thomas Massey. Massey said he's going to force a vote in the House on the full release of these records when Congress returns next month. And he told me before the House left for this recess that Republican leaders were betting this would die down during this break. But his prediction that it would not seems to be exactly what's playing out here.
That is NPR's Claudia Grisales. Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you.
We're joined now by James Marsh. He is an attorney who represents a number of Jeffrey Epstein's alleged victims. One of them is Maria Farmer, who says both Epstein and his accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell, sexually assaulted her 30 years ago. In addition to these accusations, Farmer filed a lawsuit against the federal government last May, alleging that it failed to protect her and other victims. Mr. Marsh, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
You've said several times that the victims that you represent want accountability and transparency. Do you think that they're getting that? Are they heading in that direction at least?
Well, I think it's safe to say we're heading in that direction. Although, as we've seen over the many, many years that records have been, you know, released in little bits and pieces, mostly from the court cases that involved many of these same parties, there have been no, you know, dramatic revelations or, you know, bombshell information in the prior releases. Most of the information we've seen over the years is interesting and maybe, you know, somewhat salacious, but nothing that really gets at the root of the Jeffrey Epstein story.
So assuming, though, that some of these records will be made public, as the House Oversight Chairman says, are there questions that you think the files could answer?
I think there are a lot of questions that the files could answer. And to be clear, you know, there are likely to be a lot of files about Jeffrey Epstein in the federal government's possession, not only by the Department of Justice, but the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission, prosecuted him and his associates in the 1990s. There are a tremendous amount of records in the Southern District of New York, the federal prosecutors there. I'm not sure that the Department of Justice considers that part of their records. So I think there are a lot of records and a lot of different places that we're going to need to get a hold of in order to get the full story behind Jeffrey Epstein.
And the full story being what?
Well, I think it's really important to look back 30 years when my client Maria Farmer made her complaint to the mid-1990s. Jeffrey Epstein was well known to the federal government at that time. He's actually renting a townhouse from the State Department. He was being prosecuted as part of a very large Ponzi scheme, the biggest one before Bernie Madoff, and involving Tower Financial. This period has not really been drawn much attention from Congress or anyone else, but we think that the genesis of Jeffrey Epstein's rise to power and influence can be found in the 1990s, and there are likely to be a lot of records related to those litigations.
Mm-hmm. So let me go back to the Oversight Committee, and let me go back to the subpoenas before them. The Oversight Committee wants to talk to Maxwell. It has subpoenaed witnesses, including former President Bill Clinton, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, a number of former attorneys general and FBI directors. So first, are you satisfied with the committee's witness list? But even if the answer is no, is there something you hope to learn from these witnesses that have been subpoenaed?
I think these witnesses can give part of the story, but of course you have to remember that this is not a neutral environment where Jeffrey Epstein is just some random person under investigation by Congress. This is somewhat of a hot potato. And I think anyone that has any information about Jeffrey Epstein at this date and time going to be very reluctant to give the full story just because it's such a controversial case. So we'd like to also hear from Acosta. That's a huge glaring omission. I've spoken to members of the committee. Nobody's really been able to explain to me why he's missing.
Alex Acosta being the person who negotiated the conviction, original conviction, Epstein's original conviction.
Person, at least within recent memory, that knows the most. He has made references over the years that Jeffrey Epstein was somehow related to intelligence services as part of the United States. Nobody's really asked him who told him that. So there's a lot of answers that he has. And I don't really understand. The victims and survivors are a little disappointed that his name has not come up as part of this investigation. And we think he holds a key to a lot of information or can begin to at least point us in other directions of information that's going to be critical to the American people and to the victims and survivors that, as you said, getting full transparency and accountability there.
Before we let you go, we have about 30 seconds left. Ghislaine Maxwell is serving a 20-year sentence for conspiring with Epstein to sexually abuse minors, as we know. She's been moved to, you learned that the Deputy Attorney General interviewed her last month and she was later moved to a lower security federal prison camp. Have you heard anything about that? Do you know anything about why?
We have not heard a word about that. It's sort of extraordinary in my experience prosecuting and being involved with cases with sex offenders that they are moved to a camp. So it's a highly unusual move. Hopefully we'll get some answers about that as part of this investigation in Congress. Again, there's a lot of information here. I would encourage people not to hold their breath. At least today, we're going to see what happens through the month of September.
That's Attorney James Marsh. Mr. Marsh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
A California parole board Thursday turned down Eric Menendez's attempt to be set free. Menendez, along with his brother Lyle, were found guilty of killing their parents, Jose and Kitty Menendez, in their Beverly Hills mansion in 1989. The brothers claim they were sexually abused by their father, and that has prompted increased calls for their release after more than 30 years behind bars. Steve Futterman has this report from San Diego and a warning: this contains a mention of an alleged sexual assault.
For nearly 10 hours, the parole board asked questions and listened as Eric Menendez, his supporters and relatives, tried to convince the board to recommend his release. At times, the testimony was graphic. Eric Menendez described the night the killings took place. "My dad was going to rape me that night," he said. "That was going to happen, one way or another." One of the board members, Robert Barton, said he sympathized with what Menendez endured, but he said Menendez could have reached out to police or other relatives. Representatives from the L.A. County District Attorney's Office had a different view. They told the parole board that Menendez is still an unreasonable risk to society. He has no insight into his crimes. The board focused much attention on Eric Menendez's repeated use of cell phones while in prison, a violation of prison rules. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
Even though they might not be serious to others, such as cell phone violations, they did represent to the parole board somebody who really was not ready yet to follow the rules.
Today, Lyle Menendez goes before the board. Many of the issues will be the same. But even if the board recommends that Lyle Menendez be released, it will still be up to California Governor Gavin Newsom. He has the right to veto a release recommendation. Yesterday, he talked about the Menendez case.
I have not watched any documentary. I have not watched anything that has come out on the Menendez brothers, and I very intentionally avoided that in expectation and anticipation that this might land on my desk.
The hearings are taking place by video link. The Menendez brothers are here in San Diego at the prison where they are serving time. For NPR News, I'm Steve Futterman in San Diego.
This is NPR News.
Thank you.
Good morning. It is 6:19. Thanks for listening to the Friday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr, sitting in for Heidi Holton today. John Bauer will be joining me shortly. We'll hear National Native News and then our talkback segment. It's always great to hear from our listeners about anything you hear. However you feel about it, you can text us 218-326-1234. Support for KAXE comes from Great Lakes Aquarium with its new exhibit, Lava Two Lakes, offering a discovery into what was here before the land we call Minnesota, including sharks, jellyfish, and giant prehistoric fish. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org. Patchy fog early this morning, gradually becoming partly cloudy by this afternoon. Highs in the upper 70s to low 80s, winds from the west, northwest, 10 to 20. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the mid-50s, and tomorrow partly to mostly sunny. Highs in the mid to upper 60s with breezy northwest winds. Slight chance for showers as well, and on Sunday, partly sunny and a bit cooler. Highs in the low to mid-60s, once again breezy northwest winds. Applications are now open for the University of Minnesota Extension's Master Gardener Volunteer Program. Learn how to share science-based horticulture knowledge with people in your area. The course begins in January. The deadline to apply is October 1st. Learn more at z.umn.edu or contact your local Extension office.
NPR comes from this station. And from Raymond James, a firm focused on transforming lives, businesses, and communities through tailored wealth management, banking, and capital market solutions. Disclosures at raymondjames.com. From the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. From the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm A. Martinez. Recently, I got to chat with the voice behind one of the most recognizable hooks in music. And I That, of course, is John Resnick, the frontman for the band The Goo Goo Dolls, one of the most prolific alternative rock groups in the last 40 years. But even after 14 studio albums and nearly a dozen platinum and gold singles combined, the boys from Buffalo, New York aren't done. They have a new EP out today titled Summer Anthem, and John Resnick took some time during the band's sold-out summer tour to talk about it. John, a couple of songs caught my ear in this new EP, but I want to start with one titled Nothing Lasts Forever. All right, so even just the title, John, Nothing Lasts Forever, and I'm thinking about you, you're about to turn 60. And
ouch.
Essentially, yeah, well, no, but you know, it's fine, but you've also spent 40 years at the same company.
Yes, it's true.
So I'm wondering, I mean, is this a hint, Nothing Lasts Forever, you're about to turn 60? I mean, that sounds like a retirement age kind of statement to me.
I wish it was, but it was just more about the transient nature of our relationships and life. I mean, it's like, life just seems to be moving so much quicker than it was when I was 30 or 40.
I turned 50 a few years ago, and I've always said this. I've said that to other people that I've interviewed. I never heard the clock tick until I turned 50. Do you hear it too?
Oh, yeah. I have an 8-year-old, and like watching her grow up so fast, it just gives me pause. You know, I don't know where all the time has gone.
I know your parents both died in their early 50s, and now at 59, you've outlived both of them.
Yeah, well, that freaks me out. And until I got myself cleaned up and got sober and that, I was living as though I'm just going to drink myself to death, because that seemed to be a family tradition. You know.
Did that change anything about your songwriting, about what you wanted to do with your career and your music?
I just felt like at my age, it's like you better find something to say that I feel is relevant and that my audience relates to. That's the most important thing. And we'll burn so bright, 'cause we're still alive, and on this long, lonely mind. feel like I'm in the music business anymore. Because, you know, we've been around for so long. We're a legacy band in a lot of ways, even though we're still releasing new material. And it feels like I'm releasing material for myself and for my audience. I'm not trying to have big hit songs on the radio or whatever. And it's sort of because of streaming and everything, it's like, you know, I put the music out for our fans and our audience, you know, because it's like, it ain't getting rich doing that anymore.
Were you putting out or trying to put out hits before? I mean,
No. It was never that contrived. You know, it was just sort of like, I would sit and play guitar for hours and days. And then I'd be like, yeah, check out my new hit song. You know, I used to joke about that before I had ever had a hit.
You mentioned that you don't feel like you're in the music industry. Do you think you left it? It left you?
Well, I think technology and the shift in the way people become famous. My band at the end of the 80s got in a van and drove around the country, and we were playing in crappy little punk rock bars for years. And it took me years to evolve as a writer to get to the point where I could write something like Name or Iris or whatever. And I don't believe the younger artists are given that much time. They have to hit immediately or they're just discarded. They can't find their own identity. I remember being told this. If you're going to do this, leave something behind that you're going to be proud of. And that takes time.
What do you want your daughter to kind of know about you, you know, when she's like 30 or 40 and looks back on her dad's career?
I want her to look back on my career and admit finally that for a brief moment in time, her dad was cool. That's all I want. You know?
I've heard that in concerts, you use a different guitar for practically every song. Is that true? And if it's true, why do you do that?
Yes, it's absolutely out of necessity because I took a couple of guitar lessons and I don't know all the chords. Like you could say to me, can you play a D add 9, blah, whatever it is. I'm just like, no, I cannot. I don't understand what you're talking about. You know, but I thought about taking guitar lessons, and I'm just like, you know what? It's too late. I'm always going to sound like me, no matter what. It's done okay for me. I've done all right, so.
I can totally picture a guitar teacher somewhere. You walk into their studio and like, say, hey, I need guitar lessons. They're looking at you, and they recognize you and say, don't you already play?
Yeah, but I'll be like, no, but I play all wrong, and I'd like to learn. But I kind of dig feeling around in the dark. I love experimenting. I still try to find some kind of sound that maybe I haven't done before. Something. I want to find something.
So, John, you know, you mentioned earlier how at this point you're playing for yourself and you're playing for your fans. And, you know, I'm sure your fans listen to Summer Anthem and they're going to be fine with what they hear. They're going to love it. You're giving them what they want to hear. Is that enough for you now?
Yeah. I've had an unbelievable... I mean, Jesus, man, go back and look at our track record. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like more than I ever thought would happen. More than a lot of our peers. You know, I got to do it the way I wanted to.
That is John Resnick of the band Goo Goo Dolls. The new EP is titled Summer Anthem. John, thank you very much for the time.
I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
This is NPR News.
When schools finally reopened after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans 20 years ago, many of the city's veteran educators were replaced by young out-of-towners.
The people that did come down, they were well-meaning, but they weren't trained.
I'm Juana Summers. We hear from opposite sides of that teacher divide on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered starts at 4 o'clock today here on People Powered KAXE. Your local host is Andrea DeZingle. Good morning. It is 6:29. It's the Friday morning show. Jennifer Barr sitting in for Heidi Holton today, and John Bauer is here as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer. Katrina was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. That's something else. So, first thing that happened, I had a little phonology moment this morning. I don't know if it's phonology, but I was getting in the truck and a giant toad run underneath the truck, which means you don't want to run over the toad.
Oh, no.
So I'm laying on my back trying to get the toad. You know, toads are so nice.
Yeah.
They really do let you pick them up. They don't really get in. But for some reason, he was a little bit nervous. So then I went and got a broom and laid in my back and kind of forced him out. And then he hopped out. But you don't want to start your day backing over a toad.
No.
Yeah. So I feel it's a good start to the morning. Thanks for everybody for listening at 6:30 in the morning. Another thing we've been noticing is it's getting darker, isn't it, at night?
Yeah.
It's just, and it kind of snuck up on us.
I know. I've said this before, but it happens the same every year. There's a pattern to it, and we're always surprised.
I know. We're always surprised. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's 8:30. It's totally dark.
Or in the morning.
Where did that happen?
Been noticing it, especially when this week I've been on a little bit more, but typically I'm just on Monday morning. So when you only do it once a week, then when you're up early like that, it's like, oh, that's a big difference from last week.
I know. Time is sneaking up on us. It's the morning show on KAXE. Thanks for listening in. Thanks again. We can't thank you enough for all you've done to support us during these kind of difficult times with funding crises. And your support has been heartwarming and so beneficial to this organization. And it's going to be something that's probably going to be on an ongoing basis. So, you know, continue to show your generosity through the years to come.
Yeah, we will have talkbacks coming up in a bit here. But I do want to share a comment we got last night with a donation from Kathleen in Cook. She said, I've been a member since 1979. KAXE has been a fantastic community builder and the very best source for diverse regional news. I volunteered for many years and cherished that experience, the wonderful people I met, and that special KAXE feeling with its listeners. Together, we will overcome. Thank you for working so hard to keep our boat afloat.
Oh,
well, thank you, Kathleen.
No kidding. Very important to us. We'd like to thank North Holmes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families, home, school, and in the community. More at northholmes.org.
Our temperatures right now, it is 63 in Aiken, 66 in Park Rapids, 63 in Hibbing, 66 in Grand Rapids, 65 in Brainerd, and 64 in Bemidji. Did you see any fog?
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. I was coming in on Highway 38, and usually the fog at this one air low area by a swamp goes over the road, but it absolutely stopped at the asphalt and was just thick to my right.
Because it's like the road was warm enough.
It must have been. Yeah, usually it goes all the way over, but it was just a wall of fog. And we're going to have patchy fog, gradually becoming partly cloudy today. By the afternoon, 77 to 80, west-northwest winds 5 to 20 miles per hour. Cooler tonight, lows near 50, but northwest winds up to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny, 62 to 67. Yes, we are in the 60s. With a breezy northwest wind, overnight lows tonight, or Saturday night, 40 degrees. And then
in the 40s.
Let's not say 40. Well, it's
like
says,
upper
40s. 40s.
Yeah.
It could be could be 44 or 46.
I suppose, yeah. But
and Sunday, a mix of clouds and sun, highs 59 to 64 with northwest winds gusting up to 25 miles per hour. And one thing I don't see in there that we need is moisture.
I just
keep getting teased.
Yeah,
Did it rain here yesterday for like 10 minutes at midnight? Or no, 10 o'clock?
At midnight? I have no idea.
10 o'clock, we got a little bit of dusting.
I didn't notice any rain. Yeah, no, I keep seeing like there's that chance in the forecast.
Always.
And you look and then it's like, nope.
It's that pacifying chance they have to throw up there to keep us guessing. Well, we need it. We need it very much.
Yeah, Tornado Bob did say August has been dry after a fairly average June, July.
Yeah, because it seems like we've had a lot of rain, but it's been massive, quick rains is what we've had.
And then since August, it's we're back on the dry track. But, John, our question of the week is, have you ever lived with roommates?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have
I was listening.
some stories to share?
Yeah, I've had some college roommates, of course. I started off with UMD, and I had a college roommate that partied all the time, came in about 3 in the morning. I don't know how he did it. But then I went, when I moved to Bemidji State, I had my brother and two other guys that were roommates. And let's just start saying right now, they were pigs. And I'm a clean, I'm pretty much a neat freak. Like the
you
kitchen.
You do like to clean up.
The kitchen was always a disaster. And you know, when you're young or 19, you're going to school, it's like you make hash browns and then you leave the rock hard hash browns in the pan and take you forever like an arc welder to get the hash browns off. But they were pigs. They were really pigs. And I really, it really upset me.
Yeah.
You know, no matter how hard you get, they'd try and help out, but they didn't know how to do it. The bath, we had a kid stay at our house, actually turned out to be a professional hockey coach. He stayed at our place for a few weeks. He said not even the baddest person in the world would take a bath in the bathtub, you know, brown slime. And then the roommate that slept above me in a bunk bed partied all the time, came in at 3 o'clock, got straight A's. I'm going to bed at 9, trying to study, and I struggled at school.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't fun. Having roommates was not fun. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
How about you? Well, you were in a dorm, right?
I was in a dorm, yeah. Yeah.
And?
Got matched up randomly, and it was, turned out to be one of my best friends.
Really?
Yep. Yep. She was great. And then I also lived in an apartment with another friend, the last 2 years of college, and that went pretty well, you know.
Well, maybe women are better. I don't know. So, but in the dorm, you couldn't really screw up too much. Maybe they could stay up late and keep you awake, but it's not like you had tons of food. You were making food in your dorm. You went
no,
to eat.
Not yeah. really.
So dorm is not really a fair.
Right, you don't have as much
mess.
I mean, people can still be messy.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, but in a different way. Like, you don't have the bathroom mess. You don't have the kitchen mess.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
I heard Andrew and Jen talk about it, and I was split in the gut. They had some good stories.
Yeah.
Very good stories.
So we want to hear from you. Text us your roommate experiences, 218-326-1234.
I hear people, like, friends who have young students and, like, yeah, we're going to live with six girls going to college.
Kari said
or we're gonna
she
live
lived
with five.
Like eight or somebody.
How does that work?
In St. Cloud.
How does that work?
You got to have a big place, I think.
Big place and headphones, something. Man. Yeah, send us in your comments on roommates, good or bad. That's great. You had a good experience for 4 years then.
Yeah, I would say compared to what it could have been, for sure. Okay. For sure. It's time for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. California's only Native American state lawmaker is calling on the University of California to return Native American remains and cultural items still in its possession, despite federal and state laws requiring repatriation. Christina Onnested reports.
California lawmakers condemned the University of California campuses that have failed to return thousands of Native American remains and hundreds of thousands of indigenous artifacts in their possession 35 years after federal law required their return to tribal communities. A new audit in April found UC campuses of Berkeley, Riverside, San Diego, and Santa Barbara have failed to comply and fully utilize funding allotted to them to help rematriate the remains. Here's Assemblyman Jeff Gonzalez.
If my grandmother was found, I would expect her remains to be given to her family. Not in 1 year, not in 35 years, but immediately.
The audit recommends specific funding and conditions on that funding to force compliance. UC Provost Catherine Newman says they're investing more money, but part of the challenge is finding experts to assist.
It's actually not easy to find those folks. There are some very technical requirements.
We're the qualified people.
Lee Sisko, tribal member of the Santa Rosa Rancheria Tachi Yukot tribe.
We're the expert in this field because those are our ancestors.
He spoke with California Assemblyman James Ramos of the Serrana Cahuilla tribe, who says repatriation will help Native Americans heal from the state's historical wrongs.
Those remains do carry connections to our people, and it's not until they're properly reburied that healing could start to take place from a traumatic experience that our people suffered from the history of the state of California.
Christina Onnested, California National Native News.
Earlier this week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked a land swap that would hand a swath of the Tonto National Forest, a parcel sacred to Native Americans, over to a multinational mining company. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, President Trump has weighed in.
On Truth Social, Trump blamed a radical left court for delaying the swap, which would clear the way for a massive mine run by Resolution Copper.
Trump is blatantly attempting to strong-arm the court.
Adelita Grijalva says his rhetoric is reckless, dangerous, and even corrupt. She's running to fill the seat of her father, the late Arizona Congressman Raul, who spent his political career trying to stop mining in the area known as Oak Flat. Trump called those who oppose the mine anti-American.
Trump can try to shame us. We're not going to be silenced. For him to call us all anti-American for standing up to protect Oak Flat, it's not just wrong, it's offensive. Standing up for our communities, our land, and our future is the most American thing that we can do. And we're going to continue to do that.
Resolution Copper is owned by foreign mining giants Rio Tinto and BHP.
It's no surprise to see this president side with foreign corporations over America's natural resources and less for having any kind of consideration of tribal leaders and land.
San Carlos Apache Chairman Terry Rambler believes Trump has been misinformed by Resolution Copper's supporters, even offering to sit down with the president and share, quote, factual information to protect American assets. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
The Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians in Michigan announced a donation of $200,000 to support RX Kids in the Eastern Upper Peninsula. The program provides cash to moms and babies, which helps cover costs of necessities, including baby supplies, food, utilities, and rent. According to RX Kids, the investment reflects the tribe's commitment to maternal and child health and to uplifting families across the region. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kohanic Broadcast Corporation, funded by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation.
It is about 19 minutes before 7 o'clock. It's the morning show. We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops. These are a little bit past. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook. We also want to thank the Cass Soil and Water Conservation District, offering the Managing Your Woodlands for Wildlife workshop on Saturday, September 6th from 9:30 to 11 at the Walker Area Community Center. Registration available by texting the word woods to 218-833-2492.
And Northern Community Radio's Board of Directors meet 6 p.m. this Monday, August 25th at KBXE in Bemidji. It's an open meeting. Members and the general public are invited to attend. For more information, email comments at kaxe.org, or you can call 218-326-1234 during business hours. Regular meetings of our board of directors are held the fourth Monday of the month, and the board's meeting schedule is available at kaxe.org.
So, Jennifer, there's a little age difference between you and me.
Yep.
I mean, I was talking about toads.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, if you touched a toad, you were going to get warts.
Yeah.
Did you get, in your repertoire?
Kinda? Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah. That's just so unfair. Toads are nice.
They are.
They just look at you. They don't expend any energy really running away unless this morning when I confronted them under my truck.
We would get things like that in the window well of our basement.
Oh.
So my mom was a daycare provider. We had a playroom in the basement that had a window, mm-hmm. you know, and it had, my dad had to build up a little platform as a fire escape. It was the thing she needed for daycare. She would get inspected. So we had this platform. It was really fun to have slide. But anyway, up on this platform, then we were at the window level. You could see out there. And in the window well, there'd often be things like toads and
I know.
And things. And so we'd want to go out there and, you know, they couldn't always get out very well from that.
It's yeah.
Like a little, you know.
They rescue them.
Box and.
Then you got the ones that suction cup on the windows, and they stay there forever. What? Wonder what they think when they're hanging there.
Yeah, what are they doing?
What are you doing?
One time, in that window well, there was a salamander,
ooh.
And I actually took it to kindergarten.
In your lunch pail?
No, in a coffee can with a
little grass.
Saran wrap. Yeah, it was black and brown week because we had beginning of kindergarten, we were focusing on the colors. And so each week was a color. You were supposed to bring something for show and tell that was that color.
Cool.
As I brought the salamander.
And was it a salamander that did change colors?
No,
they do
I don't,
change colors,
I don't
right?
remember. It was
a long time ago. I like that, bringing something of colors.
Yeah, and then once we got a little more advanced, then it was letters. We went through our letters, and then we had to bring a
something that started with the letter.
Yeah,
like
if it was
coffee
D,
can C or something like
yeah.
that. Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We should still incorporate that into our lives. Get some creativity going. So, what would if the color was red today, Jennifer, and you were going to school? What would you bring that would be red? This is a tough question on the fly.
Yeah. If I was in
anything laying around the house,
I'd probably just find like a toy or something that was red. But like if I was a grown up and it was like this time of year, I'd look for like a tomato.
Oh, sure. Gosh. Nice.
Strawberry.
Yeah.
We're going to listen now to our album of the week. It is called Now Would Be a Good Time. It's by the Folk Bitch Trio. They are an Australian trio of high school friends formed in 2020. And this is their debut on the Jag Jaguar label. And it's dazzling harmonies and keen observations on life in your 20s in the year 2025. The song we're going to hear from...
Did you? Go ahead.
Folk Bitch.
Folk Bitch?
Yep,
trio. Nice. I mean, interesting.
Yeah. It's called That's All She Wrote.
We're down a back road, both in the back seat of your white car, and I'm getting no sleep. My legs are hanging all over the place. Your head down my skirt, you really know me, but I can't. Later, I've met a blonde girl. She's so much younger, works in my favor. Got a career and so many prospects. I think she loves me. I'm like her object, and I can't wait to get. That moved like a quaver. I bet she's guessing my new location. I've got a hunch I'm doxed in the paper, but I can't wait to get. Thank you.
That is from our album of the week by Folk Bitch Trio. The album's called Now Would Be a Good Time. That one's called That's All She Wrote. Here on the Friday Morning Show on KAXE, you can read more about that album at our website, kaxe.org. Also, let us know what you think. Text 218-326-1234. I'm Jennifer Barr, sitting in for Heidi Holton today with John Bauer.
Coming up in just a bit, we're going to have the talkback segment of the morning show. First of all, we want to thank Northland Foundation, working with Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities working towards a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org. Also, you can pay nothing to get that old damaged car towed away from your yard. Even if it doesn't run, your donation of a car, boat, or vehicle is tax deductible. You save time and money while defending the KAXE programs you love. Call us. Call 855-277-2346 for details. And Jennifer, you're a little versed in that.
I did.
Yeah, I mean, people do that.
Yeah. I did. I was the membership person for many years, so would see those come in. And also, I donated a car once.
Nice.
And it was a pretty smooth process. But yeah, we do get those in, and it is surprising what can actually bring in some money. We got a donation recently of a Chevy Caprice, I believe, like a 1980s something.
Yeah.
And yeah, it did really well, which surprised us.
So this organization gets them, sells them?
Yes.
And then when they sell it, you get a profit, the part of the profit?
Yes.
Okay.
They auction, and they either will, you know, auction off the whole car, or sometimes, like, if especially if it doesn't run well, they'll
parts.
Yeah.
Cool. Another way to support KAXE.
Another way you can support us is buy tickets to Grand Rapids River Fest. That is just 2 weeks from tomorrow, and we are so excited. It's our lineup is Courtney Barnett, Margo Price, Jeremy Albino, and Alan Sparhawk. You can find the tickets and all the info, some lovely photos of past events at GrandRapidsRiverFest.com. It is time for talkbacks. It's always good to hear from our listeners, good or bad, your comments. You can email us, comments@kaxe.org, or text us, 218-326-1234.
We heard from Mrs. Ironsides last Friday afternoon while DJ Dang hosted on the river. She said, "So glad to hear Jesse Wells on KAXE. Such a phenomenal, heartfelt, prolific, solid folk pouring out of that kid. Loving DJ Dang's playlist today. In general, nice energy."
We also got this text from an unknown number Saturday night. "I'm not sure if you could go lower than tonight's death metal crap. Whatever happened to the high standards you had when Mark Turner was there? With your Anything Goes format, I wouldn't be surprised if you play Bubblegum. Weekends are pretty much unlistenable now." Referring to our After Dark program, which is 9 to midnight after Green Cheese Saturday nights. It features a variety of styles of music. The hosts kind of pick something outside of our norm, I would say. And this week's host, Brian Milan, will be playing ambient electronica.
And that's the beauty of music. People, you know, there's all different types of music, and it's not for everybody, but that's the beauty of it. We received a text from Vincent in Lafayette, Indiana this week saying KAXE gives so much vital and fun information, community building, weather, and great variety in music, so much so I feel like I'm part of the community, yet I'm some 800 miles away. I love you guys. Thanks, Vincent.
And volunteer Kurt Randa from Max texted Wednesday while Gina the Knife hosted On the River. He said, "I just tuned in. Loving hearing the band atmosphere. Great job."
And Lisa from Gilbert wrote in while Sarah hosted On the River Wednesday night. "Loving the music tonight."
Thanks so much for your comments. Again, it's always, you know, good or bad. We love to hear from you.
Yep.
218-326-1234. That is the number to text. Let's hear some new music now. I have been really enjoying this song from David Byrne. It's called Everybody
Laughs. David Byrne?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think you're going to like this song, John.
What? Two, one, two, three, and... Everybody laughs and everybody cries. Everybody lives and everybody dies. Everybody eats
person everybody loves. Everybody knows what everybody does. Everybody's going through the changes. Every complication. What you say with gesture and expression. In my imagination. Every mobile phone. In every restaurant. Everyone we know. And everything you want. Gonna do everything is closer, everything is true. Everybody's starting everything again. Everybody's outside now, they're coming in. Everybody's going through the garbage, looking for inspiration. Some will find it staring at the ceiling of the subway station. Everyone you love. In every kind of way, everything you know, and every single face, every change of heart, and every saving grace, every song we sing, and every kind of play. Everybody's asking, everybody please. Everybody's going everywhere at once. Everybody's backside, everybody's front.
Is new music from David Byrne with Everybody Laughs.
I think that's my theme song. Everybody's digging in the garbage.
Looking for inspiration.
Yes. Yes.
And I heard that line. I didn't even think about that when I played this song. And then I heard that and I'm like, yeah, that's you.
That is it. It's going to be patchy fog this morning early, then gradually becoming partly cloudy. By the afternoon, highs 77 to 80 with west-northwest winds at 5 to 20 miles per hour. Cloudy tonight, lows near 53 with northwest winds up to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, partly sunny, highs 62 to 67, breezy northwest winds. Overnight lows in the 40s. And Sunday, a mix of clouds and sun, 59 to 64 with northwest winds gusting up to 25 miles per hour. Sound like beautiful temperatures.
Yeah. Coming up just after 7 o'clock, we'll have the Up North Report. But right now, let's hear the set list.
This is The Set List, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows Friday and Saturday, August 22nd and 23rd, near Itasca State Park, in Bemidji, Walker, and Grand Rapids. Starting things off with the Mississippi Headwaters Music Fest in Itasca Township this Friday and Saturday. Located not far from Itasca State Park, the festival's Friday lineup includes Forge North,